Thank you for downloading the latest podcast from the Canada-Europe Transatlantic Dialogue, housed at Carleton University in Ottawa. The interviewees were in conversation with Helen Morris. For terms of use, please refer to the publication section of our website at www.canada-europe-dialogue.ca.
Hi, I'm Karen Robson. I'm a sociologist at York University. I do lots of research in the area of poverty, youth, and stratification.
Could you outline for me the current research that you've been working on?
This particular research, we were interested in the effects of social transfers on immigrant poverty across the EU countries as well as other rich nations such as Canada, the US, and Australia. In particular, there's been some discussion in the press and in policy circles about the effects of social transfers on poverty. There's one school of thought that thinks that all social transfers are beneficial to vulnerable groups and indeed will help them get out of poverty. And of course, there's the opposite side that thinks that these social transfers actually prevent integration and make people become benefit dependent. So we wanted to look at some large-scale data sets to see what happens to the immigrant group and their native counterparts in rich countries when we look at before and after benefit transfers in terms of poverty reduction.
How were you able to get hold of such wide range of data, and what are some of the countries or areas that you were studying?
It's interesting that the last decade or so, a lot of large-scale data sets, particularly those that are available for comparative purposes, have become available to the public, and we took advantage of this new availability. One of the data sets that we use is the Luxembourg Income Study. One of the professors that I work with on this project, Tim Smeeting, actually invented this data set. It comes from data files from 35 nations covering a period of around 40 years. And these data have incredible amounts of information on household income, socio-demographic characteristics, and individual characteristics. This data set is the result of a lot of cooperation among statistical agencies across the countries that are involved. So it ranges from European Union countries to Canada to the United States statistical agencies and beyond. So we use this data set to do some of the analysis. We also used a new Eurostat data set called the European Union Survey of Income and Living Conditions. And this is a longitudinal household data set that's become available since around 2006, where all the EU member states participate. And so every year that there's accession states, there are new data available for them as well. And these data give us a very detailed socio-demographic information. And the advantage of this particular one is that if you're interested, they are available in panel format, so you can look at the same people year after year after year to see if certain policies, for example, have made a change in their living conditions over time. So this is the combined effort of two large-scale data sets, the Luxembourg Income Study and the EU Silk, as it's called.
Could you tell me, you mentioned that you looked at the situation in Canada. Did you find there was a big difference between experiences in Canada and in the European countries, or was there more of a difference between European countries?
When you look at all of these countries in terms of pre- and post-transfer poverty rates for immigrants and non-immigrants, what's surprising is that the countries cluster together. The country that offers the least and receives the least benefits in terms of the poverty reduction for its immigrants and non-immigrants is the United States, so that's the one that is least generous. The Nordic states, so Sweden and Finland, as well as France, sit at the top of this graph as being the ones that are the most generous. So in terms of support payments received, they give the most and they reduce the most poverty, not just among immigrants, but among the native counterparts in those particular countries. Canada sits curiously towards the bottom between the U.S. and I believe it's the UK, right in the middle. So it's not particularly ungenerous, but it's not particularly generous either. But we look at these things and think, why is that? In some of these countries, you have to take into consideration the process of immigrant selection. And in Canada, there is a very high qualification for immigrants to be selected into our country. They have to have a certain number of points. And in general, we only take in very highly skilled immigrants, unlike a lot of these EU countries.
Could you tell me where would you like to see your research heading, either from this current data set or within this area of policy research?
Well, one of the things that we can't look at in this analysis is how other social transfers that aren't measurable in cash in particular are helping or not helping immigrants and as well as their native counterparts. And some of those things include healthcare benefits. So when you ask people about the benefits they receive, they can't really put monetary value on socialized healthcare. And this is a huge driving force, we believe, in poverty among immigrants, where it is well known that people at the bottom of the socioeconomic scale suffer the most health problems, and therefore if they can't afford health care in a cash payment system, they are more likely to have unmet medical needs. We are able to look at this if we do a slightly different analysis, which we are at the beginnings of doing right now. There's also the case for building skills. And there are different policies among countries for what you charge for post-secondary education. As is well known, the association between income and poverty, they're almost the same, but getting skills helps you get out of poverty. And one of the biggest setbacks for people can be the actual cost of getting those skills. So being able to invest in their own post-secondary education. And a lot of the countries that we've looked at in this analysis, education is covered entirely by the state. And some of the countries that we look at, or particularly the U.S., this is not the case. In Canada, it's kind of a mixed system where there's a huge amount of public a subsidy available to people who are resident or have naturalized. But if you aren't in that state, you still have to pay, if you're an alien, you still have to pay exorbitant amounts of fees to, say, attend college or university. So we want to work those sorts of non-cash benefits into our analysis, too, to see how that affects immigrants being able to get out of poverty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.